Hi, I'm Andy Finn, and I am begging you to listen to my show at www.andyfinn.us.
The Andy Finn Show, Uncommon Talk Radio.
I'll tell you how uncommon it is. It only happens once a week, and it only happens for an hour. And that's not because it's not great. It's because I don't have the time to solve all the world's problems. So today I'm going to focus on our problem here in the United States. The decider can't seem to decide. So the president was going to give a speech before Christmas, and then he talked to Karl Rove, and he said, you know, Karl, I'm getting ready for Christmas. I'm thinking of what I want Santa to bring me. Do I really have to give this speech before Christmas? And Karl said, no, George, if you don't want to, you don't have to. So he's not going to. And what's interesting is that the ducks are being set up. Last week, there was a piece in the paper about how the Joint Chiefs of Staff are advising change in the war strategy. Okay, they don't want a real large troop increase, but they do want to shift from what we're doing currently to supporting and training the Iraqi army. I thought we were doing that all along, but who knows? But then the next day, General Peter Shoemaker, who's the chief of staff for the army, said that the army needs to grow to handle what we've got. And, you know, Colin Powell took to the airwaves this weekend, and Colin Powell said, we don't have the troops. And of course he's right. There are people say, oh, we could come up with a certain amount. But in fact, we're stretched pretty thin right now. So John McCain's notion of adding 50,000 troops or something in the short term, just, I mean, I don't know where they get them. We're stretching them too thin. We're breaking the army is what we're doing ultimately. We're sending these kids back for 2 and 3 tours. You know, they're home. They're over there 12 months, home 14 months. You know, some of them got new babies. They got a wife they're trying to support. There's reservists that are running into this problem, and employers wondering when they're going to get their employees back. It's a problem. That's where a lot of the pressure is coming from. But it turns out this general's not the decider. You know, he's only the chief of staff of the army, and the president's the decider. Now, what was interesting was the general says the army needs to grow. Right below it is an article, Rice rejects overtures to Iran and Syria. So the Iraq study group recommended that we behave like adults, and adults talk to people even when they disagree with people. So his point was, we talked to the Soviet Union during the Cold War, and they had 10,000 to 20,000 nukes aimed at us at all times, and we were willing to talk to them, and they were committed to our destruction. And we talked to China once Nixon opened the door. And so why wouldn't we talk to these little rinky-dink countries, which may or may not be committed to our, quote, destruction, but can't really do it? We're not in any fear. See, the Soviet Union really did have huge leverage over us. What we're talking about with North Korea, by comparison, or Iran, is peanuts. Yes, North Korea has, I don't know, they got 2 to 6 or 8 nukes now. They don't have the delivery vehicles for them, even though the conservatives and Fox News want you to believe that they could reach the United States currently with their current missile technology. We don't even know if they know how to make a bomb small enough to put it on a warhead. Right? All this technology takes a great deal of money and time to perfect. And we took years to do it and to miniaturize this stuff. I'm not at all convinced the threat is what conservatives want you to believe. I've often thought that it's interesting the interpretation that a lot of Americans put on this red state, blue state, or Republican Democrat view of the world. When Democrats say, don't worry so much about some of these threats, you're overreacting, let's speak softly and carry a big stick, or let's not attack this country, let's not invade, or let's talk to them. Republicans are often saying, you should be very afraid. They have a nuclear weapon. I mean, I watched Fox News when North Korea blew up, had their nuclear test there a couple of months ago. I watched Fox News draw a graphic that showed a dotted line, and it showed missiles leaving North Korea and striking 3 U.S. cities, including Chicago, and I think St. Louis. And I guess the other one would have been Seattle or San Francisco. And I'm thinking, we know they don't have that technology yet. And yet Fox News is making it look like if they wanted to, they could do this. Now, the Soviet Union was always in a position to do that. If they wanted to, they could have pushed the button. That would have meant self-annihilation as well. But that was a real threat. North Korea's got a few nukes. I don't think they're going to use them. It's the same with if Iran gets a nuke. We seem to be predicating our treatment of Iran on the belief that as soon as they get a nuke, they will look for a way to explode it in Israel or in the United States, but probably Israel. I don't think that's the case at all. We've never had a nuclear power who immediately went to explode it, except the United States. But, of course, we were in World War II, so that was justified. But back to the recent elections this weekend in Iran, it turns out that Ahmadinejad's candidates lost ground. So even Iran thinks he's too radical. So we'll see what comes of that. But if Condi Rice can say we're not going to have overtures to Iran and Syria, and if the general who's in charge of the army chief, you know, the army chief of staff, Peter Shoemaker, can say the army needs to grow, what are these people doing making these decisions? I thought George W. Bush was the decider. And they're not saying he told me to go out and say this. They're making these statements themselves. So I wonder if he knows what's going on. I'm thinking of writing him an email. Anyway, what's interesting is how the president is dealing with this whole issue of the Iraq study group and the new direction. So there's been a certain amount of analysis about this. But the Washington Post had a nice piece in yesterday's paper, a piece of analysis about the fact that whether people see Bush as stubborn or they see him as resolute, that he just isn't the kind of guy who changes his mind and who budges on an issue. And so it'll be interesting to see people like Alan Simpson, who's a former Republican. Not a former Republican, he's a Republican, a former senator from Wyoming, and a very reasonable fellow. And by that I mean he was always willing to reach across the aisle and work with the other party on things they could agree on instead of arguing about things they couldn't agree on, which is what ultra-partisans do most of the time. And so he's a pragmatist, and he's very much interested in seeing the rancor go away and some cooperation exist in Congress. But he defended Bush and said that, quote, George W. Bush is a totally pragmatic politician. He's going to do outreach. He's a total realist. Well, we'll see. And I like this line. Now he knows the solid march in step Republicans, at least in the House, are gone. Now his legacy depends on the national interest, not partisanship. Well, let me just have a little bit of an aside here. Why shouldn't his legacy always depend on the national interest? Right? He used a partisan approach to what he thought was the national interest, but he's going to have to suck it up here and decide that. Let me restate the problem. For those of you who wonder why Bush will persevere with this war, and he will. Most pundits are predicting that he will not change course significantly. He will dress it up, perhaps, as a change in course. But he's after victory. Now, never mind that most of us can see that victory is impossible in that situation. Let me point out a couple of things here. The first is I've talked in recent weeks about the fact that there are two Americas when it comes to the lessons of Vietnam. The blue states of America, the people in a blue state of mind, the people who are multilateralists, and who believe in talking to your allies and your enemies, negotiating and seeing where you can find common ground, those folks look at this situation and believe that you have to talk to Iran and Syria. And that's what the adults stepping in with the Iraq study group were all about. But the president has argued all along that you can't trust those people and we'll go with the coalition we have. And so he went into Iraq with minimal support. We dragged the British with us, even though they counseled against it up until the moment that Tony Blair threw in with Bush and said, we'll do it because you're America and you're our ally. But the lessons of Vietnam are interesting here for both sides, because to me, the lesson of Vietnam is you can't go into somebody else's country and expect to drive them off their land. Right? But that's not the lesson that President Bush takes. He was in Vietnam a couple of weeks ago on a trip, and they asked him, a reporter asked, is there a lesson in the Vietnam War for our situation in Iraq today? And Bush said, yes, there is a lesson. And the lesson is, if you quit, you can't win. So half of the country has took the lesson from Vietnam that I took, which is you can't go into somebody else's homeland and expect to drive them off the land or to win. They can hide. They can go home for dinner. In short, they have a huge home field advantage. We had it during the Revolutionary War, and we should have learned then that guerrilla warfare and going into somebody else's land is difficult. But certainly more recently, Vietnam should have taught us that. But that's not what conservatives have taken away from Vietnam. Many conservatives think like George W. Bush. You just have to have a conversation with them about Vietnam. And a lot of conservatives and Republicans will tell you two things about Vietnam. One is that it was the media that lost it, and the anti-war crowds at home that lost it, that America lost its will to win. And secondly, that the country shackled the military's hand and didn't let them win. Well, I don't know what else they wanted besides carpet bombing from B-52s and defoliating parts of the jungle with Agent Orange, because the only thing left is probably nuclear weapons. And I know conservatives who thought back then that we should have dropped nukes in Vietnam, that thought in 91 we should have dropped nukes when Saddam was in Kuwait, or thought it this time around with the Iraq War. And I have to keep reminding people, and some of them don't believe it, that there is no way that a U.S. president, even George W. Bush, is going to be the next person in the world to explode a nuclear weapon in anger or in an act of war. It's just not in the cards. Our moral standing would be decimated at that point if we were to do that. Go after a smaller country with a nuclear weapon. We don't need nukes. We've got conventional forces that outmatch the next 10 countries combined in the world. And most of those 10 are our allies. So there's very few things that can challenge us out there in terms of our military strength. But that's what's driving Americans crazy, because what they see is we're spending $450 billion a year on military. We've got 10 aircraft carriers. We've got these smart weapons. And yet we can't seem to beat these. Well, it was 4,000 to 10,000 insurgents at one point. Now it's bigger. But the point is, we were frustrated as heck that we couldn't beat it. Well, there's a reason, and there's a thing that's going on here, and it's those people live there. It's home field advantage. So back to President Bush, there are some people saying, oh, he will change. You know, he's a realist. No, I think I'm with the people that say he's not a realist. He is an idealist. And it isn't simply that he's convinced he's right and he's a black and white kind of a thinker, and so he's going to stick with this course. Bush's problem is that he thinks too much about his legacy. And people have found, when they've talked to him, he reads a lot of biographies now. I don't know what he used to read, but he's fascinated with presidential biographies. What a surprise. He's worried about his place in history. He's had reporters into the office, and he's the one that brought up his legacy. So he's thinking about his legacy, and here's the dilemma for America. President Bush's legacy and the thing we ought to do in Iraq are at odds with each other. See, I'm sure that Rove and Cheney and Bush have talked about this. If George W. Bush pulls out of Iraq, if he reduces the footprint, if he redeploys, however you want to put it, he loses in history. Iraq war is definitely a failure at that point, and it's pinned on him. On the other hand, if he stays the course, he believes that he can win this thing. And if he wins, then he's proven right and everybody else is wrong. So we've got Bush's legacy up against what's good for the country. And what do you think he'll do? Well, he thinks it's good for the country, but but the other thing is the only way he can salvage his reputation for history is if he doesn't pull out. So we're stuck here. I don't think he's going to make a very big change in January, but we'll see in January. And until January, since the next two Monday nights are Christmas and New Year's, this is the last Andy Finn show. So we will be back on January whatever. No, it'll be January 8th with another edition of the Andy Finn show. Until then, you can read my blog. You can read my listen to my archive shows at andyfinn.us. And until January 8th, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.